Welcome to the back pages from the Hartford Current and the Journal Enquirer. I'm Rick Gray. I start with an article by Carla Johnson of the Associated Press, The Greatest Medicine. Service dogs help ease PTSD symptoms in U.S. military veterans, researchers report in study. Specially trained service dogs helped ease PTSD symptoms in U.S. military veterans in a small study that researchers hope will help expand options for service members. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs provides talk therapy and medications to veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder and runs a pilot program involving service dogs. The VA can prescribe service dogs to certain veterans diagnosed with a visual, hearing, or substantial mobility impairment, including eligible veterans with PTSD, and will cover some costs associated with having a service dog. The agency continues to review the research to evaluate the effectiveness of service dogs, said VA Press Secretary Terrence Hayes. And we are committed to providing high-quality, evidence-based care to all those who served. Study co-author Maggie O'Hare of the University of Arizona's Veterinary College said one of the researchers' goals was to bring the evidence behind a practice that appears to be increasingly popular, yet historically did not have the scientific base behind it. For the study, service dogs were provided by Canines for Warriors, a nonprofit that matches trained dogs with veterans during a 3-week group class. The dogs are taught to pick up physical signs of distress and can interrupt panic attacks and nightmares with a loving nudge. Researchers compared 81 veterans who received service dogs with 75 veterans on the waiting list for a trained dog. PTSD symptoms were measured by psychological doctoral students who didn't know which veteran had service dogs. After 3 months, PTSD symptoms improved in both groups. But the veterans with dogs saw a bigger improvement on average than the veterans on the waiting list. The study, funded by the National Institute of Health, was recently published in JAMA Network Open. It wasn't clear from the study whether spending time with any dog would have had the same effect. About 40% of the veterans in both groups own pet dogs. And all the veterans in the study had access to other PTSD treatments. Service dogs should be considered complementary and not a standalone therapy, O'Hare said. When you add it to the existing medical practices, it can enhance your experience and reduce your symptoms more, she said. PTSD is more common among veterans than civilians, the VA says, affecting as many as 29% of Iraq war veterans over their lifetimes. Symptoms include nightmares, flashbacks, numbness, or the feeling of being constantly on edge. I would wake up in the middle of the night, almost nightly, in a pool of sweat, said David Crenshaw, who served with the Army National Guard in Iraq and was diagnosed with PTSD in 2016 while working undercover in law enforcement. Antidepressants helped with some symptoms, he said, but he still felt numb. The 41-year-old veteran met his service dog, a pointer black lab mix named Doc, in 2019. He immediately felt what he described as joy and wholesomeness. It's just an overwhelming feeling of, hey, everything's going to be okay. Doc senses when he's upset, often before Crenshaw notices himself, and draws close, Crenshaw said. Today, Crenshaw is no longer taking antidepressants and is enjoying retirement from the military and law enforcement. He gives Doc credit for getting his life back on track. It's the greatest medicine with the least amount of side effects, he said. Now let's move over to the advice column by R. Eric Thomas, Asking Eric. Teetotalers concerned about wife's heavy drinking habit. The first letter, Dear Eric, we are a retired couple in our late 60s. In our younger days, we enjoyed an active social life that often revolved around drinking, sometimes to excess. As we've grown older, we've slowed down, improved our diet, and taken up a near-daily fitness regimen that has us both in pretty good shape. My wife still drinks more than she should, as measured by my opinion and numerous articles I've read. We've discussed it a few times, and she makes an improvement for a short term, but then backslides into her habit of having 4, 5, sometimes 6 glasses of wine a night. At the same time, I've eliminated alcohol entirely. I don't nag her about it. I'm all for everyone making their own choices in life, but I know the effects of this amount of regular drinking is not healthy. I used to buy the alcohol for both of us, and since I stopped, she has purchased the wine on her own. Yesterday, knowing that I will do this week's shopping, she put wine on the list. I am torn between telling her I won't enable her drinking, while expressing my hope that she can again reduce to a more reasonable level, and just keeping quiet about it. Signed, Winding Down. And the response, Dear Winding, when one partner changes, the whole system changes. But that change is often more complicated than we'd like it to be. Let's put aside for a moment the facts around alcohol consumption. In your marriage right now, you and your wife aren't aligned in a vision for how you want to live life, together and individually. Your wife hasn't made the same decision that you have about alcohol, and it bothers you because you care about her, but also because it's different from the choice you made. Perhaps it even makes you question your decision. There are hundreds of similar decisions that happen in a marriage. Conflict can arise from the fact that no one can make their spouse do what they think their spouse should do. You don't have to keep buying wine and shouldn't if it's causing you consternation. Tell her that you've made this decision and your reasons for doing it. Don't expect that your reasons are going to make her change. When we comment on a loved one's drinking or any behavior, it can shift the loved one's thinking. However, people's decisions to change their behavior have to come from them. If you feel her consumption is having a negative impact on your relationship, say that. I'm sure you've already presented her with the data. The U.S. dietary guidelines recommend 1 5-ounce glass of wine per night or less. And the National Institute of Health on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism categorizes 4 or more drinks per day or 8 drinks per week as heavy drinking. Show your concern and love while also recognizing that this journey is new for both of you, and it will take you different amounts of time to get to wherever you're both going. The next letter, Dear Eric, I may be hopelessly old-fashioned at 73, but when my children were young and received a gift, I gave them note cards, stamps, and addresses, and explained the ways a thank you could be worded. I encouraged them to include information about their lives, school, etc. It seems that now parents don't care enough to teach their children to acknowledge a gift. I've been chastised for discontinuing to send cards, gift, or money to young people past the age of 15 who never thank me or even acknowledge a gift. I am frustrated that I am forced to contact the recipient simply to hear the excuse, "Oh yeah, I got it. Thanks." Am I wrong for expecting a thank you and setting the consequences? Signed, Disgruntled Gift Giver. And the response, Dear Giver, social mores may change, but the words thank you still mean the same thing. You're not asking a lot, and if your relatives can't teach their kids to respect your boundary and acknowledge your gift, then you don't owe it to them. 15 is old enough to learn the value of healthy communication. Besides, it's important to remember that relationships, especially with older relatives, aren't ATMs. Hold the line. In a last letter, Dear Eric, in response to the letter writer looking for ways to respond, when people ask what she does in retirement, I always say, I wake up in the morning with nothing to do, and it takes me all day to do it. Signed, Booked Calendar. And the response, Dear Booked, love it. Enjoy your crowded, careful days in good health and good humor. Well, so much for the present. Let's look into the future by reading horoscopes from tarot.com. We'll start off with Aries, March 21st to April 19th. New forms of revenue could be appearing. There's a strong focus on building security and letting abundance flow through the channels you've already set up. But if you're not doing anything, you'll be less able to utilize these opportunities. Be open about what you want. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. Take a chance on yourself. While you might have a talent you'd love to share, you simply haven't had the chance to do so. While any fresh openings probably aren't one-way tickets to stardom, they can still act as stepping stones toward what you love full-time. Take a chance. Gemini, May 21st to June 20th. Get in touch with your intuition. While letting your gut be your guide can be confusing, your inner voice is speaking more directly than usual. It's inviting you to follow a path that onlookers describe as lucky. Don't be surprised if you follow a hunch to somewhere new. Cancer, June 21st to July 22nd. Your hopes and dreams are getting an injection of motivation right now. You might have felt the momentum slowing down when it came to pursuing what you really want out of life, but good things are just around the corner. Networking is a great way to bring them even closer to reality. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. An authority figure is a great spotter as you learn the ropes. There's always more to learn about life, and someone who's already been through it can guide you around any traps you can't see yet. Being a good listener and asking respectful questions will take you far. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. Whether you're being consulted, teaching, or merely talking about your area of expertise, you're likely to be sought out for your advice or opinions. The honest knowledge you carry can elevate you to places you never expected. Let your love for learning shine now. Libra, September 23rd to October 22nd. Deep connections are favored right now. You're able to draw on a deep well of creativity thanks to the people around you. No art or inventions necessarily have to come about, but if you both feel stirred to create, this could be an incredibly special moment for you both. Scorpio, October 23rd to November 21st. Your loved ones can be amazing cheerleaders at present. You don't have to lead a company or win national athletics competitions to be applauded by the people who love you. Personal milestones, even small ones, should matter to them as long as they matter to you. Take pride in yourself. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. Where have you been investing your energy? That's where you'll find the most luck. For instance, if you've been regularly exercising or practicing a language, opportunities may arrive in the form of a marathon or a chance to study abroad. The universe is opening up for you. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. Go ahead, take a chance. You've got support when it comes to doing something new, and you can be a little impulsive with it too. Life is for the living, and you've got an extra dose of luck on your side. As long as you're not hurting yourself or others, open yourself up. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Allow your heart to take the lead. Sometimes you might be afraid to let your heart guide you, as you may have been burned in the past, but the events of today can open you back up to creativity and youthfulness. Let your inner child come out to heal and watch yourself prosper. And finally, Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. Let life fall into place. The less you try to control things today, the better, as people will likely bring you opportunities for having fun and taking your connections to the next level. If you're going to do anything, make a point of spending time with the people you want to grow closer with. Next, let's go to the commentary column by Joe Pisani. Did I say that? Trust no one, especially columnists. I love a good conspiracy theory. Why? because they're probably true, even though the powers that be work overtime to convince us otherwise. One of the greatest curiosities in modern America is that the younger generation believes everything the government says, everything academia propounds, everything they see on social media, and every utterance of self-proclaimed experts. How did that come about? Remember the good old days when our motto was, "Don't trust the system"? Well, we're finally finding out what happens when you trust the system. But back to conspiracy theories. Some of them just don't die, such as the mystery surrounding the Beatles' White Album and the JFK assassination, not to mention the purported government involvement in the death of Marilyn Monroe. There are tons of conspiracy theories about UFOs, now known as unidentified anomalous phenomena. I hope the government bureaucrat who came up with that verbal monstrosity got a big bonus, because half the country doesn't have the faintest idea what it means. It probably means there's nothing to see here, folks. And what about conspiracy theories concerning the sinister origins of COVID? From marketplace bats to laboratory rats associated with the NIH. Remember when they said it was criminal to suggest it might have come from a lab in China? Social media is filled with conspiracy theories about vaccines. Don't get hysterical, I'm fully vaccinated. Well, almost fully, but I have to whisper now so certain family members don't find out. There are conspiracy theories about election fraud, about who's running the country, about Russian collusion, about collusion between politicians and the media, and of course, about poor Joe Biden. Someone suggested to me the other day that the Democrats should try to get Michelle Obama and Pope Francis on the ticket. Is that even possible? The Pope is 87. Besides, he's not a U.S. citizen, but I bet they could pull some strings and make that work. However, I won't believe it until I see it on CNN. I'm convinced there's one thing all Americans want, regardless of whether they're Democrats or Republicans or independents or simple-minded people like me who believe politics is not the solution to the problem, but the cause. Yes, we all want one thing, to stop the pain. But can people who cause the pain be counted on to stop it? The country is in sad shape. None of us get along, and we don't believe what we're told. I can imagine how Augustine of Hippo must have felt when he saw the Roman Empire collapsing all around him. At least Benedict of Nursia took action and built a monastery in the mountains where the monks could hide out. Every election, people like Alec Baldwin and Whoopi Goldberg say they're going to leave the country. But where can they go? The monastery? Canada, where they're even more confused than we are? My daughter, who lives in Southern California, recently visited and tried to abduct me and take me back with her. She said people in California are friendlier, they're laid back, and they're smarter than the rest of us. I guess that's why so many of them are moving to Texas, so they can enlighten those poor cowboys. Besides, California has too many celebrities for my taste. And the earthquakes worry me because I'm convinced the big one is coming, as Fred Sanford would say. I still have nightmares about that movie San Andreas, starring The Rock, where California tumbles into the sea, as Steely Dan would say. But at the end of the movie, they all work together to rebuild, which is what we should be doing now. Hey, maybe The Rock should run for president with the Pope. I don't want to distrust the system, but that's what happens when you watch The X-Files, which I started doing on the advice of an astute reader. That show taught me you can't trust people in power, especially if it involves aliens. Trust no one is the X-Files' motto. I don't want to believe our institutions and leaders are prone to lying, deceiving, and conspiring. But I suspect when their sole motivation is holding on to power, they'll do and say anything. I didn't come up with that idea. I think it was Thomas Aquinas, or Machiavelli, or Jason Bourne. To quote Edgar Allan Poe, a man with a clear vision if ever there was one, believe nothing you hear and only half that you see. That includes this column, not to mention our political leaders, along with influencers in social media and mainstream media, and those telemarketers calling you with the deal of a lifetime, and those crazy ads on YouTube. What America needs is people who tell the truth, especially when that's supposed to be their job. Trust me. Oops, didn't Nixon say that? Let me remind you. Just because I have a column doesn't mean I know what I'm talking about. However, since you made it to the end, I'll reward you with some good old-fashioned, unadulterated truth that came from the lips of my mother. Some people lie for a living, and they usually have a lot of co-conspirators. Can I get an amen? And since I've wandered over to the Journal Enquirer, a couple of pages from there, I find an advice column. It's advice from Dear Abby. Mystery of missing underwear leaves hostess embarrassed. I got to admit, I couldn't pass up on this one. The first letter, Dear Abby. We invited a couple for a short visit to our remote country cabin. Afterward, I discovered a pair of pink panties lying on the road in front of our mailbox. When I picked them up with a stick to carry them to the trash, I realized they were a pair of clean pink panties I had misplaced. They must have stuck to the sheets I had placed on the bed immediately before our guests arrived. Now, I can't stop wondering what this couple must have been thinking when they tossed the panties. This may not seem like a serious issue, but it has become a source of embarrassment for me every time I meet these folks. Should I explain the panty situation or let it go? Signed, Red-Faced in South Carolina. And the response, Dear Red-Faced, don't get your panties in a twist. The next time you encounter the couple, ask if they have encountered a pair of pink panties that you misplaced around the time they came to visit. The next letter, Dear Abby, I was watching a police video on the internet, and I spotted the woman who lives in the apartment next door. I know it's her because of the prominent tattoo on her chest. She was being arrested for drunk and disorderly conduct. She went ballistic on the cops. First, she screamed and fought back. Next, she sagged and started sobbing at the top of her lungs. Then she started laughing maniacally. I'm afraid to live next to her now. Should I show the video to the apartment manager and ask that she be removed? Signed, Scared in Oklahoma. And the response, Dear Scared. Although the police video was understandably upsetting, I'm not sure that showing it to the building manager would be enough to have the woman evicted. It might, however, be a valid reason for you to move out of the building. If you're truly fearful, consult an attorney who specializes in real estate law who can advise you on possibly breaking your lease. And the next letter, Dear Abby, my wife and I are considering a move to another state to be close to our son and his family. Here's our dilemma. We have 4 lifelong friends who are respected and successful local real estate agents, each of whom would expect to be selected as the listing agent of our home. Choosing one would undoubtedly leave the other 3 hurt and offended. They all know each other. We feel our only option is to choose an outside agent to sell our home and to explain our rationale to our friends before the property hits the market. What say you, please? Signed, Hard Choice in the South. And the response, Dear Hard Choice, there is more than one way to handle this. The first would be to use the outside agent and possibly alienate all of your lifelong friends. Another would be to tell all of them you plan to move to another state to be closer to your children and see which one of the 4 offers you the best deal to represent you in the sale. And next is a health column by the Mayo Clinic. Is macular degeneration screening newer guideline or just age-based? The question, I recently celebrated my 50th birthday and had an eye exam. The ophthalmologist recommended that I get screened for macular degeneration. I was surprised because nobody in my family has had any eye issues, and I'm not having trouble with my vision. I know many health screenings are needed as I age, but is this a new recommendation or simply because I'm getting older? And the answer, happy birthday and welcome to your 50s. As you noted, screening recommendations often are based on age, including those for your eyes. Age-related macular degeneration is the number one cause of vision loss for adults over 50. It may run in families, but not always. So a routine screening is recommended for most people as they get older. Age-related macular degeneration affects the retina, particularly the macula. The macula is a portion of the retina with specialized cells that give you your sharpest vision. Your retina consists of layers of neural tissue that line the back part of the eye and send information from the eyes to the brain. Most of the important vision tasks are done by the cells in the macula. This includes things like reading, recognizing faces, and identifying road signs. There are two types of macular degeneration. Non-exudative age-related macular degeneration, also called dry macular degeneration, may proceed slowly, but it can cause severe central vision loss over time. Exudative age-related macular degeneration, also called wet macular degeneration, can cause permanent and rapid central vision loss. Dry macular degeneration develops first, and an optometrist or an ophthalmologist can detect it during a dilated eye examination. This likely is the type of screening your eye doctor recommends. Dry macular degeneration is associated with gradual blurriness of the central vision or occasional waviness of straight lines, such as light poles. If the retina is like a large field, dry macular degeneration is like getting pebbles, dry patches, or large potholes, or experiencing loss of all the grass. One eye can be worse than the other. Over time, vision worsens and affects the ability to perform everyday tasks. Having dry macular degeneration doesn't mean you will lose all your sight. Vision loss involves your central field. Wet age-related macular degeneration, the exudative form of the disease, can cause sudden blurriness to complete loss of central vision. Doctors aren't sure exactly how macular degeneration happens, but you can take steps to decrease your risk of developing it. Anyone older than 50 should follow these tips. First, get routine dilated eye exams. Have your eyes examined as recommended. Aim for good overall health. Maintaining a healthy weight and normal blood pressure and cholesterol levels are good for the eyes as well as the body. Follow your doctor's instructions for managing other medical conditions to keep your eyes healthy. Don't smoke. People who smoke have a greater chance of getting macular degeneration at an earlier age, and often their disease is more severe than people who don't smoke. And finally, eat leafy greens such as kale, spinach, and collard greens. They provide key vitamins that improve the health of your retinas. You can't reverse damage caused by macular degeneration, but treatments can slow the progression and preserve existing vision when started early. In your 50s and beyond, continue to visit your optometrist or ophthalmologist for routine exams. That's the way it went on the back pages. I'm Rick Gray. So long until next time.